Hi, I'm Britt Garner.
And I'm Rob Spall.
Welcome to Nature Insight.
Speed dating with the future.
We're back for our third season of the IPBIS podcast. This is where we have the chance to offer you backstage passes to the science and policy of biodiversity.
So, Britt, it's really been quite a while since our last speed dates. It's great to reconnect and to have the chance to work together again on a third season of Nature Insight.
Yes.
I'm still here in Germany, in Bonn, and we really are quite a world away from how things were even at the end of last season. Those final hand sanitizer stations and health barriers have come down even from the last of our grocery stores. So, at the risk of jinxing things, the lingering effects of the pandemic seem to be mostly behind us. So, how about you? I heard you've continued to be on the move. Last season, you relocated from the wilds of Montana to New York City, and now you've relocated again.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to make sure that every time we have a new podcast season, I've moved so that you have enough material as far as intro to ask me about. So
considerate. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm here for you. Indeed, I am out of New York City, currently in the less frenetic surroundings of Boston, but I've been teaching high school science and continuing my work in science communication.
Good morning. It's Friday. Opening circle, let's do a flashback Friday. Anything since Monday of this week that you have learned, let's put up on the board. It can be small, it can be big, life-shattering, minute, whatever you want.
You know, we've talked a lot in the past about speed dating for the future. This is our tagline for the podcast. And what that means is having a short time to communicate things that could be really impactful, change your life and the life of the person you're speaking to. That is definitely something I keep in mind when I'm teaching, especially when dealing with well-meaning, but we'll go with easily distracted high school students.
How many of your students know that you speed date part-time when you're not teaching?
They do know. They do know about this. They're actually very excited about media and about communication. And I even had the chance to do some science communication with some of these high schoolers last year, which was amazing. We actually took them minus their cell phones.
Shock and horror.
You have no idea. We went to a small island off the coast of Maine to conduct field research for this marine biology course.
Wow.
And despite that shock and horror, it turned out, you know, getting to learn outside while being truly present was an absolute gift for me, for the students, just for our entire group. This is a recording from our first night on the island. We built a ritual around singing to the sunset as a way to appreciate the special place we were in and the experience we were sharing together. This is an original song written and being performed by some of the students, and the rest of us listened on amid the wind and the sound of the surf from the stunning intertidal zone of Hurricane Island.
Now, what an amazing opportunity for them and you to get, again, up close and personal with nature, Britt.
Totally.
On our side, some of the big news from last year was that the new Global Biodiversity Framework, which had been in the pipeline for so long, was finally adopted by governments in December.
Woo.
And that sets some ambitious new targets for nature globally over the next 10 years, which is obviously great news. That was the sound of Scylla, which is an Inuit throat singing duet from Nunavut in Canada. And they were one of the incredible performances that were on the stage ahead of the meeting where the Global Biodiversity Framework was adopted.
So cool.
We were also very proud last year that IPBIS, together with our sister organization, our older sister organization on climate change, the IPCC, we were both awarded the prestigious Gulbenkian Prize for Humanity, which was quite a big moment for us.
Now I'd like to invite the Executive Secretary of the IPBES and Larry Gaudry to come up on stage. This prize will be awarded by Angela Merkel.
So that was the sound of the prize giving from the Gulbenkian Prize for Humanity, Brit. And it was awarded to recognize the role of evidence-based policy and action in protecting the environment, but also, quite particularly, to recognize the important role that the experts from both of our platforms, IPBES and the IPCC, have had in helping people make better choices about nature.
Well earned to you and to all of those colleagues. I know that a big part of that evidence-based science is thanks to the work and the assessments of IPBES. And I think there's actually some of those that may have come out, some really exciting releases since our last season.
Well, it's exactly right, Britt. You might remember when we were in season two, we were talking about two new reports that we're about to launch.
Indeed.
One was on the many and different ways and important ways of valuing nature. And the other report was on the sustainable use of wild species. One of the things that I think was most impactful out of both of those reports was the way in which they were able to actually influence the discussions that were taking place that we've talked about already in Montreal in December. And one of the things that always brings that home to me is in the discussions that we were having about the sustainable use of wild species, for instance, there was this message that many people consider wild species to be something other than them or apart from them or something that's not immediately important to their daily lives. And hearing how so much of the work that we're doing has value and relevance in everybody's life, almost irrespective of where they live or which community they're from.
And it's so interesting that a lot of times it's kind of an element of surprise. You find out that things you weren't expecting play a way bigger role that you may not have ever thought about. And, you know, when it comes to life on Earth, I will say there are few things that are as important, but actually kind of hidden away as this amazing group of organisms that we call fungus. Bum, bum, bana!
Even in the way we talk about it, I mean, we talk about plants, animals, fungus, algae. It's always like it's the add-on to plants and animals. But yeah. In so many ways, it's at least as important, if not more important.
Right. We got to start the biodiversity list with fungus. I think this is clearly where we're headed, especially after talking to our guest today. I am so excited to share this. We have Shiva Devkota from Nepal. Shiva is actually one of that country's leading mycologists. That's mushroom or fungus scientist. For years, he's been researching the variety of fungi and lichens that exist at altitude in this mountainous country. So let's cut over to that interview. And I will say we obviously began by comparing our fashion choices. For those who will only hear this instead of see this call, I am currently dressed in a shark dress and you are dressed in a mushroom shirt. So we really are on brand.
Actually, I got this shirt from my colleague, my friend, Brit Bonnier, and he's a great mycologist, you know. Thank you.
That is absolutely fabulous. I'm sure, you know, as a mycologist, as someone who studies fungi, I'm sure you get all kinds of treats and mushroom decor from friends and family. Can we start, though, to just even understand what are fungi? I mean, we think about life on Earth and we think, oh, plants and animals. But wait, there's this entire other group.
I think you are right. I mean, many people, they still not recognize or even heard about the term fungi. Actually, fungi are living organisms, as you said, that are not plants or animals. They come in different shapes and sizes, like mushrooms either or molds, you know. So unlike plants, fungi can't make their own food and get nutrients by breaking down organic matter or forming partnership with other organisms, okay? So they play important roles in ecosystem by decomposing dead materials and helping plants absorb nutrients. Some fungi are helpful, like yeast for baking, as we all know, while others can cause diseases. So they are fascinating and important organisms in our world.
Oh, absolutely. And it's so interesting that something so important and so key to other organisms got lumped as just, well, they're not plants or animals. So it's so exciting to hear you talk about them as their own thing and their own amazing group of organisms. I'm sure that you did not originally know as much as you do about this. In fact, I've heard that you have been interested in fungi from a very young age, but I would love to hear what that process was like. What was your connection originally?
I was born and raised in the countryside village that's called Lumley, which lies in the very famous Annapurna trekking routes. So during our school days, every day I walked like 45 minutes to go to school and back with friends. So we explore forests and grasslands along the way while going to school and coming from school. Our school was surrounded by green forest where we gather berries and fruits in the seasons and even during the class breaks. In the rainy season, we hunted for mushrooms, especially the Torimitomyces species. Torimitomyces species are very common in our land, and even in Nepal, that species is very common. My mother, she taught me which mushrooms to eat and which mushrooms to avoid, you know, using her traditional knowledge. So yeah, mushrooms became my childhood temptation.
Childhood temptation. I love that. And I know that you then learned so much along the way, both formal and informally. And as you said, having knowledge passed on from previous generations. In terms of research in a more academic setting, how much do we really know about fungi? What are those questions still out there? Is this a relatively studied group, or are there a lot of question marks?
I think that's a good question, because let's talk about the gaps, right? Globally, the fungi diversity, it is estimated that it should be around 2 to 3.8 million species.
Wow.
But out of which, about only 120,000 species are recorded so far, of which only 14,000 species of wild mushrooms are observed.
Amazing.
So it means in the global context, in the regional context, and like I'm working in Nepal and in the local context, still more species are awaiting for their explorations, for their nomenclature, and for their conservation and preservation.
And for human quality of life and consequences to our societies, what are those consequences of research gaps when it comes to these species?
In the scientific sphere, still we need more scientific explorations. But in the societal context, in our context, and which we can generalize in the global context, still many people, mostly the rural people, mostly the poor people, they depend on mushrooms. Regarding the consequences, actually in Nepal, mushroom poisoning is a significant hazard. Each year, around 30 to 35 people, mostly children, they lose their lives due to poisoning. These are the gaps where we should work, we should act to minimize such tragedies. It is very important that we should reach to those communities to make them aware with the notion that if you save one life, you save the universe. You know, we are working together, you know, to raise awareness among people through awareness camp and distribution of educational materials.
It sounds like amazing work, especially collaborative, based in science, based in communities, all of the good stuff coming together. It's amazing to hear about. In terms of value within the larger IPBIS framework and stakeholder group, we talk a lot about values and nature's contributions to people. And I believe there's very high value for certain species in Nepal of fungi, particularly the caterpillar fungus, this mushroom. Can you tell us a little bit about that organism and what it means for the environment and the people in Nepal?
Actually, this is very good questions, because last week I was in the mountains during my field course, and I witnessed several people, they were collecting caterpillar fungus. So actually the caterpillar fungus only occurs in Nepal, India, China, Tibet and Bhutan. So it's a very high altitude species. It provides a tremendous, significant amount of household income. In some areas in Nepal, like up to 65% of household income is sourced from its collections. So we call it as a Himalayan gold. For this year, the price per 1 kilogram of dried caterpillar fungus, it goes up to $15,000 to $20,000 US dollar in Nepal.
That is stunning.
Yeah. So this is very amazing fungi. This is very amazing fungi.
And that must have an impact in terms of how people are using it. I guess people in the area, or do people travel to this area to get these resources? How is that impacting that local environment?
I have seen that thousands and thousands of people were collecting this category of fungus from such altitude. They were all tented above the tree line, fixing their tents. You could clearly imagine how much forest they extracted for their fuels and the pollutions. So we need to address several things.
These prices are so high, and I'm curious, what exactly is it that drives that cost point? Why is it that these are so expensive?
This is very interesting because, you know, I'm in Nepal, but I was never known about the price of caterpillar fungus because that fungus grows in the high Himalaya. And during my history, when I went to the real site, you know, with the people, with the collectors, with the traders, and I realized that lots and lots of collections from Nepal that goes to China. And the main trade center is China. And scientifically, what we learned is that actually the major chemical component of this fungus is D-mannitol, that is cordyceptic acid. It is an immunoregulatory active, you know, compound, and like with other compounds like inosin or polysaccharides. So it is supposed to boost immunity. So people are paying for to boost immunity, you know, for anti-aging, for anti-tumor, to minimize diabetics and heal other heart-related problems. So it is also called a Himalayan Viagra, you know, due to its aphrodisiac nature. That's why the people are paying more money with the belief that it cures everything, it boosts energy. And the consequences, as you say, that the decline of populations means decline in collections, you know. Decline of population means decline in collections, and it means to reduce income, which ultimately impacts their livelihoods, food security, and supplement income, as I said earlier. So these are the two things: skyrocketing price, and changing mountain environments, and depletion of populations. Three things are going parallelly with this caterpillar fungus.
And that makes me think, you said the changing mountain environments. It sounds like a lot of these expeditions to collect caterpillar fungus, and also, I would assume, climate change. I know that there are multiple threats facing these regions. What are some of the biggest ones?
Climate change is a slow process. We cannot generate our results looking after a few years, okay?
Sure.
But the simple thing is that degradation of collection pasture, that is a major problem. Degradation of vegetation, because, you know, that caterpillar fungus, main source of caterpillar fungus is a moth caterpillar. And if the population of moth is declined, then ultimately that goes to the caterpillar fungus, and the population of caterpillar fungus will decline. These are such you know, closely related things we should consider. We should consider about the moth, we should consider about the moth's habitat, and we think we should also consider about the fungus system.
Spoiler alert, we are all connected.
Yes, we all are connected. So it's a web of science.
Absolutely. I recently taught a high school course of juniors and seniors, so ages 16 to 18, a course on marine biology. And when we were talking about the biodiversity of the oceans, we realized there's kind of not a lot of fungi. We were looking around and it seemed like there were very few specimens and organisms and species really known. And my students asked the question, you know, is fungus a land thing, or is it just that we have no idea? And it made me think, there's so much that fungus is and does within biodiversity for this planet we're on. And I would love to hear from you, an expert. What is that role? Where is fungus when we think of biodiversity for life on Earth?
Let me describe in three very simple and easy terms the role of fungi. So number one is they decompose dead organic matter, recycling nutrients in ecosystem. They are good decomposers, number one. And number two is they form beneficial partnerships with plants, aiding in nutrient absorption. We call that mycorrhizal association. So they are very important. And number three, as we all know, that they have commercial and medicinal uses, such as food production and medicines. So these three are major importance of fungi.
Mount Everest within this region is a place of great adventure, great beauty, great and stunning landscape and organisms. And I know that you have led treks on Mount Everest, but I heard about a very special one, and I thought it was incredibly exciting. Can you tell us about a special trek you took, which was not for thrill seekers, but rather fact seekers? It sounds like you took some scientists. What was that about?
In 2019, my colleague Rick Silber, who is a member of the Mycological Association of Washington, D.C., we conceived the idea of organizing mushroom expeditions in Everest area. So bringing mushroom lovers from the abroad. Because if tourists come here to Nepal to see rhinos, to see elephants, to see mountains, so why not mushrooms? That was a question which was always, you know, tickling in my mind.
Imagine yourself exploring the world's most stunning travel destination and being one of the first to discover new mushrooms in the region.
Due to pandemic, that was postponed until 2022. We successfully executed that expeditions, including a diverse groups of both PhDs and citizen scientists from the USA and Mexico. To our delight and to our surprise, we discovered like 155 different species of mushrooms. Only Amazing. Along the trail, starting from 2,000 meters to above 5,000 meters, some of which had never been documented in Nepal.
You no longer have to be an expert climber to experience these glorious mountains and mushrooms in their natural setting. We've custom designed this fungi foray to
Interestingly, we found mushrooms above the Khumbu Glacier. So we found mushrooms at 5,139 meters.
Wow.
So it was like a foremost mycological expedition in Nepal. So people, they never heard about this kind of things. And so we organized a meeting for the press, you know, press conference in Kathmandu, capital city, and which generated significant attentions and articles about our mushroom treks, and we're featuring major newspapers in Nepal and as well as the Washington Post in the USA. And we were recognized by the government of Nepal, and we were also appreciated by the Nepal Tourism Board.
I'm confident that you will find, just as I do, that this magical area of the world never ceases to amaze and inspire.
We were making our tourism plans in the off-season, because the rainy season in Nepal is considered off-season for the tourism, but we were bringing tourists, you know.
I'm going to have to talk to Rob and make sure that the podcast team goes on the next one. It's just way too awesome.
Yeah. It was a great success. And let me tell you that this year, in 2023, we are organizing another trip in the Annapurna region. We will be leading a group of five PhDs this time and other mushroom lovers.
Mushroom lovers. So I have seen your work in print and in photography, actually, before ever knowing your name or getting to now meet you here, because a photo that you took of this stunning mushroom being held by someone is on the cover of one of the IPBES assessments, the Sustainable Use of Wild Species Assessment. And it's just a stunning photograph. And on top of that, you recently even had a lichen named after you, which is just so cool.
Yes, that species called Lobaria depcoti. So I'm Shiva Depkota, and that comes with Depkota. So depcoti, Lobaria depcoti. That species was recorded in China. And I'm very thankful to Chinese and Swiss lichenologists. So this new species is very rare and has been reported only from some part of Sichuan province. So in next stage, my aim is to explore more, to travel more, and to document more. Because many of fungi, they are still not explored in Nepal. And we are like very handful of people working in Nepal. And so I have seen lots of gaps, and I have seen lots of opportunities being in Nepal.
It sounds like more is on the horizon.
Yeah, yes, truly.
So while I have you here, is there anything else you'd like to mention or something on your mind to share with us in this incredible topic?
I would say fungi holds untapped economic potential, like caterpillar fungus or like mycotourism, for their valuable contributions to sustainable economic growth and biodiversity conservation. So these groups would be recognized in the upcoming assessment, like the IPBES Business and Biodiversity Assessment, rather than only bringing cases from only higher plants or fauna, you know, flagship mammals or birds. So I hope they will include it generously, and I would love to bring my contribution wherever and whenever applicable, because fungi is also the major component of like business part, you know, major component of biodiversity assessment. That should be one thing. And at the end, I would like to add that scientific studies of fungi are still negligible compared with higher plants and animals on global, regional, and local scales. So we need collaboration, you know, we need exchange of ideas and support to work further on. And I would like to welcome interested ones to visit Nepal, Himalaya, to dig out further novelties.
A call to adventure. We love to see it.
What a fantastic interview, Britt. I really have to say, when I heard we were going to be having an episode that dealt with climbing Mount Everest and the Himalayas to talk about mushrooms, I was really curious as to see which way it was going to go. But that was a fantastic opportunity to again underscore how little we know about so much when it comes to nature and biodiversity. I what was it that Shiva called it? The gaps and the opportunities. That was such a great way to illustrate that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really humbling, but also really exciting to me as someone who has academically studied biodiversity, but also as someone who tries to get other people interested in it or open to learning about it. Who knows what we find out next? It's just such a great illustration of how little we know, but how exciting it can be.
Even the existence of mushrooms or fungi at those altitudes, so high up in conditions that perhaps are what we might consider normally as less hospitable for most of at least human life. I mean, it tells us, I think, quite a bit about the resilience of nature, the unexpected ability perhaps of some species to survive in harsh environments. It kind of gives us in some ways insights into the natural world every time we discover one of these new species or find out something new about an ecosystem that helps us then take that information and perhaps use it elsewhere.
Oh, definitely. For us, we think, oh, life up that high, you know, Mount Everest, like what could even be there? And then you have all of these fungi species being like, here's good. This is great, actually. We're vibing. This is perfect. Thanks so much.
What I really loved was the invitation that he issued. I mean, how many times do you get an invitation from one of the world's leading scientists in a field to go and visit Nepal and to explore Nepal and collaborate on research to find out more about what this means globally?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I actually already bought tickets, charged it to your account. I hope that's okay. I figured I was going to ask for forgiveness instead of permission on that one.
So Nature Insight coming to you live from the Himalayas next time, right?
You're welcome. That's it for this first episode of Season 3 of Nature Insight, Speed Dating with the Future. I'm Britt Garner.
And I'm Rob Spall. Next week, I'm going to be exploring a very different subject, which is how we at IPBES are working with and supported by networks of people, stakeholders around the world, to raise awareness about the work that we're doing and to promote research and evidence for biodiversity.
And in the meantime, you all can learn more about IPBES's work on www.ipbes.net or on any of their social media channels. Just search for @IPBES. That's @IPBES. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.